The Kinky Cocktail Hour is brought to you by Motor Bunny, the world's most powerful saddle-style vibrator that offers fabulous creative sexual experiences. We use it and it rotates, it vibrates, and it delivers mind-blowing orgasms. Enjoy Motor Bunny as your favorite sex toy. When you order the Motor Bunny, multiple attachments are included along with the Link controller, which allows wireless control from anywhere. Motor Bunny is the world's most powerful saddle-style vibrator on Earth. Use the link in the show notes and spice up your sex life with a Motor Bunny. You're listening to Kinky Cocktail Hour, a conversation between adults about sex-forward relationships, kinky lifestyles, and frank communication. If you're under 18, please stop listening and visit scarletteen.com. I'm Lady Petra. My pronouns are she, her, and hers.
I'm Saffermaster. My pronouns are him, his, and he.
And this is Kinky Cocktail Hour.
Cheers! Cheers! Okay, so what are we drinking today?
We're drinking a drink called the Suburban.
Okay.
It has a huge history, so I'm going to tell you what's in the drink first. We can taste it, and then I'm going to tell you the history, because it's worth reading.
Okay, good.
Anytime you have something like Imbibe that gives you information,
yeah,
it's neat to know where it came from.
Sure.
You know, or at least where they purport it to come from.
Sure.
So this has 1.5 parts of rye whiskey, and then a half part of dark rum, a half part of port, and a dash of orange bitters and a dash of Angostura bitters.
Wow, that's a very interesting combination.
Yeah, and then you shake it and serve it in a chilled cocktail glass. And our freezer's working fantastic because I stuck those glasses and I thought, oh, I don't have enough time to get them chilled properly. And they came out perfectly chilled.
Perfect.
So there's no garnish with this, straight up. This is a big boy drink, I'm sure.
Okay. Let's taste it. It smells like the rye. That is a big boy drink.
It's a big boy drink.
That's just like pure alcohol.
Like, yeah, it has a little layers.
With a slight flavor.
It has a layer.
It's like drinking grain alcohol with a slight flavor.
There's complexity to it in the back
of your
throat.
It's going to take me a minute.
yeah. So while you're enjoying it, let me give the history. And I would just want to indulge on this because it's long, but I think it's worth it. I'm reading this from Imbibe itself to give them credit, but there are some cocktails we'd frankly like to see more of, and the Suburban is one of them. It's a relic that comes to us from the upscale gentlemen's clubs and hotel bars of the late 19th century in New York City. And today it would fit in just as well at the same types of establishments except for the gentlemen's clubs. Those are totally different now. Unlike many of the other classic cocktails, the origin of the Suburban is fairly well established. Multiple sources confirm that it was created during the 1880s in honor of James R. Keene. In 1852, Keene immigrated to America from England with his family at the age of 14. He quickly proved to be a shrewd investor, and by his 30s, he had been appointed president of the San Francisco Stock Exchange. But he had his eye on bigger prizes and moved to New York City in 1876. He continued to invest successfully and involved himself heavily in horse racing and breeding. He proved to have a knack for it, and his thoroughbreds won several significant races in the United States as well as France and England. He was a pretty big deal at the time. Apparently, he was such a big deal that someone mixed a drink for him that became modestly popular throughout the upper crust of the New York society. But when was it created? First, we look at why it's named the Suburban. Like, why would it come up with that name? Because his name's James R. Keene. The Suburban Handicap Thoroughbred Horse Race is the last of the three races that completes the New York Handicap Triple.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. This race series began in 1884, so the cocktail was most likely created after that. Unfortunately, Keene lost everything to bad investments in the Chicago grain market that same year. If the drink was named after him in the couple of years that followed, it certainly wouldn't have been in honor of him.
Right.
But we did mention that Keene was a shrewd investor, right? Within a few years of his financial collapse, Keene completely reversed his fortunes and established himself once again as a major player in the New York finance world, managing funds for William Rockefeller and J.P. Morgan. By 1891, he was back to investing in his true passion, horse racing, and his Castleton farm in Kentucky eventually grew into one of the most important breeding operations in American horse racing history. We also know that the recipe and the story of Keene's Honoré Cocktail were printed in the bar book of the Manhattan Waldorf Astoria.
Wow.
Which is a big deal, because there's some handwritten books that they have, which opened in 1893.
Right.
Okay. So the story had to have been somewhat established by that time. We think that the smart money is on when the Suburban was actually created would be 1888 to 1889, when he had reclaimed his wealth. But that's just our best guess, and the whiskey history is frequently up for debate.
Well, I have to say that one of the things I love about Imbibe is the way they bring back these old drinks that are 100-plus years old, you know? And it's really great to literally taste something and think, well, for hundreds of years, people have been drinking this drink.
Yeah, and I think because this is like a what you would consider a brown martini, we expect a certain thing to come out of it, like would be closer to a Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And however, it does use rye, but it is not a Manhattan at any level.
At any level, no.
And it is closer to a martini in the alcohol, like you feel the alcohol, like when you have gin or vodka martini.
Well, I have to say that I'm a third of the way through it,
mm-hmm.
and now the flavors are starting to show themselves.
Right.
You know, so it's like you have to get past the like in-your-face alcohol shock to get to the flavors.
Right.
And the flavors are actually pretty good.
Yeah, so it's amazing how these old-school drinks, they all have a certain lane they fit into.
Yeah.
And this fits right into that lane, along with Manhattans and martinis and those kinds of drinks, sidecars. And, yeah, it's interesting drink.
Yeah, very cool. I like it. I ran into Paul on Twitter after he had published Jane Boone's book in his magazine.
Oh, nice.
And he's got this really great King magazine called The Dark Side Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things we love to do is talk to folks who are kink and sex forward and kink and sex positive. And his magazine is really quite beautiful. And I'm really excited to hear from Paul. So, Paul, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you guys for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's our pleasure, Paul. So we ordinarily begin our conversation by inviting you to share your journey in kink. So tell us your journey from where you started and how you got to here and what you're up to now.
Okay, sure. Well, my journey began not that long ago, really, probably around about 2008, 2009. All that I really knew about the whole fetish BDSM thing was really what I had learned from sort of the mainstream media. In other words, I kind of thought, yeah, it's a little bit of, it's a weird kind of thing that people get indulged in. It's something a bit outlandish and maybe even a little bit kind of dark. So that was my kind of perception of it, really, back then. What actually happened to turn that around was round about that kind of time, 2008, 2009, my partner at the time had, she had sort of lightly been into this kind of thing in terms of sort of bondage, anal play, that kind of thing. And we decided to kind of, you know, to experiment a bit in that. So that being very new to me, after a while, I began to actually really quite, you know, I really quite enjoy this. And that became gradually more and more part of our relationship, more and more part of our sex life. From there, I then got to hear of other websites where you could actually meet and talk to other people that were into the whole kink scene, FetLife being one of them. And that really opened up a whole new world to me, because I could see that beyond, you know, what I thought was fetish and BDSM, there was a much broader aspect to it than I could have ever imagined. And that really did begin to kind of open things up for me. So my partner at the time and I, we started to expand a little bit into doing other things, sort of heavier versions of bondage, introducing sort of, you know, a wider variety of toys and that kind of thing. And it was just a fascination that grew and grew within me, really. I then got into meeting different mistresses here in the UK and having sessions with them. And that, again, continually helped me develop my kink journey, if you like. And really, that kind of brings us into how, I guess, the magazine came about, really. I have to say that that was, what, sort of 10, 11 years ago. And I've still got quite a lot more to learn. I may be the editor of a fetish magazine, but I still have an awful lot more to experience. But nevertheless, my interest in it and desire to try new things is still very much there. So hopefully, continuing my journey forward, I'll get to experience other aspects of the whole BDSM and fetish scene.
Got it. So it sounds like if you're seeking mistresses and you're seeking experiences with mistresses, that you maybe identify as submissive, right?
Yes, definitely. I would say I was much more submissive than dominant. And I guess maybe that's a question that everybody asks themselves, that perhaps they, you know, certainly in my experience, there has been that sort of, am I a switch? Am I both dominant and submissive? Because sometimes in my play, there has been a sort of a partly dominant side to me, which is like, you know, I want you to do this or I want you to do that to me or whatever. But essentially, I would say that I am really much more submissive than I am dominant or switch.
Would what you're describing be classically referred to as topping from the bottom?
Yes, I would say I probably have been guilty of doing that. Yes. Yeah, I would definitely say I have done that on occasion. But I think if I did have to label myself, I'm not that keen on using labels, but if I did, I would have to describe myself as being submissive.
Totally get it. In your exploration, and obviously you've experienced things so far and you have things yet to come, do you have things that are yet to come that have been put on hold basically because of COVID? And if those things exist for you, what kind of things are you fascinated by right now?
That's a good question. That's a very good question. Yes, because of COVID, there has been, that has stopped everything, as I'm sure it has for most people, really. I guess what I would like to explore more of is the whole submissive side of thing of my being, really. And I think that has kind of grown in fascination for me again through doing the magazine, and again through learning, through interacting with other people. That's a tough question, really, to answer, because there are quite a lot of different things I would like to try. I mean, I would like to try being dominated, for example, by more than one person at a time. I might would perhaps like to try being a sissy for a while and see how that goes. So I think those are the main kind of things I would perhaps like to explore as and when we're all let out to play.
That's perfectly put.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I guess I would have a question too, is one of the things that people, COVID time, what I've noticed more coming up on FetLife and other forums is, because we're isolated, or more so isolated, that chastity has become a big thing because people are kind of forced. So to give yourself meaning, if indeed you are isolated completely, that the chastity brings a sexual element in there for people who are in isolation due to COVID.
Yeah, so have you explored that?
I haven't explored it. I know quite a few people that for whom chastity is their thing. And in all honesty, I don't think I'm disciplined enough to be able to to be able to do that. I have thought about it, but it's little more than a passing thought. I really admire people that can do that, especially when you consider some of them are such a long time in chastity, and the fact that they are doing that largely for another person as well, I think is really admirable. But it's not something I don't think I could do. I don't think I would last very long, to be honest.
I get it.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right, Paul. So tell us about the magazine. How did that come about, and how do you find content, and, you know, what's the process that you go through month by month to produce such a fine magazine?
Okay, sure. Well, I come from a publishing background. Most of my career has been involved in the creative industry in one way or the other. I've worked for, you know, a number of publications, mainly sort of small business publications in my career. And for quite some time, back in sort of round about 2014, 2015, I'd been thinking for quite some time about wanting to create my own publication. And I'd thought for quite some time about what kind of subject would I like to create a publication in. And the obvious one really was the whole fetish and BDSM scene, because firstly, that was a big fascination for me. And secondly, there is just such a broad, it's just such a broad subject. There are so many aspects to that. And the fact that you've got a massive audience across the world. So that really kind of appealed to me. What I actually did initially, a friend of mine suggested approaching FetLife and just seeing whether, you know, sound them out, perhaps they might want to have their own magazine. And I thought that was quite a good idea, because that would save me from, you know, having to create a brand new magazine from scratch and try and, you know, build up a following, you know, right from the beginning. So I did approach them, and, you know, a while after, I got a reply back to say, you know, thanks very much, but no, it's not for us, which I was a bit, you know, upset about, because I thought, you know, I was quite happy to do all the work. And I thought with their kind of backing, that would have been fantastic. But that didn't happen. So I thought, well, okay, nothing to lose. I'll create my own. And that's really, really what happened. I went about setting up accounts on Twitter and Facebook and various other social media, and just kind of sounding people out as to whether there was any need for another magazine. And if there was, what kind of content would people like to see? And I had a really good response, and it was really encouraging. So that's really pretty much how it began. And, you know, from there, it was a case of just coming up with a name for the magazine, coming up with a design, coming up with some core values for the magazine as well. So, you know, were we going to include, was it just going to be for just one gender? Was it going to aim for everyone? Were we going to include any transgender material in there? All these kind of things that you need to think about when you're setting up a magazine. What kind of audience are you going to appeal to? Because obviously the kink scene is huge, but there are so many different facets to it. So all those things that were something that we were, you know, I was thinking about along with my wife Dee, who helped me on the magazine. These are all things that we had to think about before we were able to start putting a magazine together. So that's really how, you know, it all started to happen.
Got it. Okay. So tell us, what are the core values of the magazine? Like, who is your audience, and what is the content structure of the magazine, so folks who are listening can go, yeah, I think I'd like to get that.
Okay, sure. Well, I mean, in a nutshell, the magazine is aimed at everyone that is into the fetish and BDSM lifestyle, whether that's full-time or on a casual basis, because as you well know, there are people that live it 24/7. There are other people that like to indulge, you know, in some soft play just every now and again, and everything in between. So our readership is pretty wide. We cater for singles, we cater for couples of all mixes. Some are very experienced and have been involved in kink for much of their lives, while others are just starting out. So the way we approach our content is we like to, if you like, with those that massive diversity in mind, we like to try and cater as much as we can for them. So our content will include articles, for example, you know, basic stuff about sort of the basic elements of BDSM right the way through to advanced articles, you know, that the more sort of hardened kinksters might want to know. And that also applies not just to the written articles that we have, but also to the content that we have, the photographs that we have. So again, anything from, you know, simple fetishes to, you know, like sort of latex play, that kind of thing, right up to blood, scat, real sort of graphic torture. So we try and sort of, as I say, kind of cater for as broad a range as we possibly can. Not so that we can, you know, be everything to everyone, because we never will, but we think that diversity is such an important thing that we like to kind of reflect that in the magazine. We don't always have a broad spectrum in each issue. We might, you know, we might have one issue might be slightly softer and slightly more geared towards people starting out. Another issue might be geared towards, you know, people that are further along on their journey. So we do like to kind of mix it up a little bit in our content to keep it as fresh and as lively as possible.
Now that's so interesting. And I agree, you know, we like to say that there's no right way to be. And in that there's no right way to be, you can't really choose, you know, a group to cater to because they're the right group. So it's best to just appeal to everyone. That's sort of what we've discovered in our pod, you know. There's absolutely an enormous audience, and every single human being has their own particular peculiarities in the world of fetish. So it's really wise that you've chosen that path. I am curious though, where you get your content. Who are the content providers that you interact with that provide that amazing photography?
Yeah, I agree that the photography that we have is incredible. And when we first started out, that was one of our main concerns. You know, where do we get content from? How good is the content going to be? But right from the word go, we have never struggled for really good quality content. There are so many talented photographers out there and models and writers. And we don't just work with professionals. We like to work with amateur photographers and models as well. And when I first saw sort of the work that was coming out from people who weren't necessarily doing what they do as a living, in other words, they weren't actually earning money from it, but they were doing it on an amateur level, their work was absolutely incredible. So the work that we, the photography that we get comes from professionals who are doing it for a living, right the way through to amateurs who just happen to find that they are really good and they've got an eye for good photography. And as I say, we've never struggled with content, because there are more and more content producers coming online all the time, constantly churning out really, really good work. That's not to say that we won't have the odd page where we'll take, you know, pictures from people who've just done stuff on a, you know, on a phone, because even then the quality is very good. So now and then we will include, you know, people that have submitted stuff that they've just done on their iPhone or whatever, and it perhaps might not be quite as good as the, you know, the higher end stuff that we see, but the content of it is good, because sometimes you have a photo which might not be technically as good as some of the other ones, but it's the actual content that is striking. So although we do tend to stick with professionals and amateurs who are turning out really, really good images, sometimes we like to include stuff that might not be technically as good, but there's something about their photography that we say, hey, this would make a really good page in the magazine. Let's include it anyway.
That's great. So I'm under the impression that you have an actual print magazine as well as an online magazine. Is that accurate?
That is correct. Yes. Although we didn't actually manage to get into the print side of things until probably about middle of last year. We didn't get into being able to offer a print edition of the magazine until probably about the middle of last year of 2020, mainly because we needed to find a good print on demand service, because as I'm sure you're well aware, it's expensive to get into print. So if you print out thousands and thousands of a magazine, that gets very costly. And so we decided to go around down the print-on-demand route. So we've got the magazine available on a site called MagCloud, which allows you to get really good quality printed versions of Darkside on there. And what they'll do is that they'll print it for you and deliver it straight to your home address. And we've had really good response on that. Since we launched that, we've been fortunate enough to get some really good reviews saying, you know, that the print quality is really good. The paper stock is really good. And of course, that's when the photography really comes into its own as well, because they it really does show up really well in the print edition. So we're really pleased with how that's going. We might, depending on how things go in the coming year, we might see if we can't get things printed in higher numbers rather than print on demand. But we'll just see how that goes. But we're just happy at the moment to be able to offer a printed version, because we do get asked quite a lot for people that just prefer to have, you know, a physical copy of the magazine.
Oh, that's great. Tell people where to find you online.
Okay, well, we have a website, www.darksidemagazine.com. From there, you can order our magazine. As well as just having an order page on there, there is tons of stuff on the website, which tells you a little bit about the magazine. We've got blogs, forums on there. We've got some videos on there as well, because we've also branched out into doing some of our own fetish shoots. So there's a few on there for people to look at. But essentially, yeah, you can go onto the website from there, and it will then take you to another site called jumag.com, which is where the actual magazine itself is hosted. So from there, you can actually order.
So Paul, when people go to your website, they essentially are becoming a subscriber to your magazine in the online version, and then they have to select also if they want a print version, or is it included in both, or how does that work?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You can subscribe to our newsletter by going to darksidemagazine.com, and that obviously is absolutely free, and we send newsletters out a couple of times a week usually, just to inform people as to what we're up to, what's coming in the next edition, that kind of thing. But yes, on the website, you can actually subscribe to Darkside. Or if you don't want to subscribe for a whole year and you just want to try it out, you can also just purchase a single issue. But from darksidemagazine.com, there is also a link to MagCloud where you can order a physical hard copy of the magazine as well. So we try to keep it as easy to order as possible.
When you talk about direct, I think you referred to it as direct printing. So I'm not familiar in the industry what that means. And I'm assuming that means that I could go in and, you know, I can only imagine it's like Playboy, where you can go in and you can actually select issues that you want and get them sent to you, the hard copies. Is that kind of what's happening?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So if you follow the link on the Darkside magazine website, if you click on the link that says order hard copy MagCloud, it takes you to this other site called MagCloud.com. All of our issues are on there, and it's really simple. Yeah, if you decide you want to have a hard copy, you just choose your issue. There's a description of what's contained in each issue, and also a preview, so you can actually kind of see what's in that issue. And basically, you just fill out, you know, your name, address, and make your payment. And as soon as the order is put through, the magazine is then sent to the printers. It's printed up especially for you, packaged up, and then sent out. So it is literally a print on demand, which is a really great way of doing things. The magazines are actually really beautiful, the printed ones. They are, as I said before, printed on high quality gloss paper. They look absolutely, absolutely fabulous.
That's amazing. That's great.
I love that you do that, because I also love the where you're at now with this direct print, the no waste of paper.
Yeah.
I just love that. That's great.
Paul, thank you so much for coming on. This has been fascinating. And I acknowledge you for living a dream, for literally taking a consideration that you had and a curiosity and some skills and putting it all together and making something that really demystifies and makes available to the world interested in kink, fascinating, beautiful kink photography and content. So thank you for all of that.
No, thank you very much, guys. I hope my ramblings have helped clarify a little bit about what Darkside is all about, but thank you for having me.
That's it for today. If you're interested in kinky relationship coaching, online domination, or if you'd like to sponsor the pod to keep it going, please visit our Patreon website at Lady Petra Playground. You can reach me via email at ladypetraplayground@gmail.com. Our music is composed and performed by Roger Ferguson, who can be found at rogerfergusonmusic.com. Till next time, cheers!